Chapter 1. If you can't control their passions, then make thinking about them evoke contrition. This is Wendy Billings' plan. She diligently sifts through the Daily Mail's TV guide pullout, circling the Manchester Derby and Crystal Palace versus Liverpool, today's two BBC FA Cup games, with an air of rectitude beyond rationality. It's not Wendy harbouring footballing interests, but her 15-year-old son Justin, which simply won't do. With the week's sport earmarked, including midweek rugby, Wendy resorts to dousing her impeccable skin in makeup. Now comes the tough call. She scans through her meticulously stacked shelf, brimming with dozens of £50-plus purchases to complement her conventionally beautiful face. Flustered by the wealth of options, she settles for a spot of subtle Giorgio Armani foundation. She ruffles her naturally thick blonde curly hair while smirking in the vintage mirror.
Justin!
She stomps into the living room to find Justin militantly awaiting, dressed as instructed, in oversized, faded rags as to make them appear impoverished. They're off for a newspaper interview, instigated by Wendy, to bewail their alleged dire financial predicament and highlight the government's role in quashing living standards for families like theirs. Another scuppered Saturday for Justin. But what with Wendy's football ban, the car journey at least offers food for thought beyond bedroom-bound, substandard daytime TV marathons or household chores. Having volunteered to slump in the back, Justin gloomily gazes out of Wendy's Toyota sports car's window, a regular fixture of his time, as they hurtle around bogus appointments, manifested to solidify the illusion of Justin's disability. They're warmly greeted at the Conway News headquarters by Julie, an unassuming yet fiercely ambitious local journalist who entered the game late in her 30s, having grown tired of scrubbing bedpans in a care home for the elderly.
Justin, Wendy, cheers for joining us today.
Our utmost pleasure,
Wendy regimentally says.
Quite the drive, eh?
Wendy coldly shrugs. The prospect of acquiring both narcissistic supply and, possibly more benefits, showers her with the motivation needed for such drives. Julie smiles and leads them to her unremarkable office.
Do take a seat.
She hands Wendy and Justin an ice-cold bottle of water each from a mini cooler. Wendy glowers at the bottle, then at the steaming hot paper cup of coffee in front of Julie, and subtly grimaces.
I presume Charles filled you in on our planned line of questioning.
Somewhat.
Right. Our primary focus will be on the circumstances of your tricky financial predicament, and we'll also touch on how our status let you down, your experience, or lack of, with the local mental health services, and any thoughts on how the welfare system could be improved upon.
Julie turns to Justin, who's picking the side of his finger to the point of minor laceration.
Sound good to you, mate?
Spot on, yeah. Just what I'm catting to chat about.
Julie crams in a desperately needed hefty swig of coffee.
Marvellous.
Reluctant, forced-in interviewees are the ultimate subconscious energy vampires.
I commend the bravery on both your parts. We reckon this will help scores of those in similar circumstances.
And how is this brave?
Few put themselves out like this for the sake of social progression. Especially those still in school.
First of all, what is my, our fee? Old Charles only coughed up a ballpark figure, see?
Julie rolls her eyes.
Classic Charles. For a story like this, we offer £80.
Wendy's eyes whirl in shoddily disguised disgust.
Unfortunately, we're only a local paper.
The clicks, you'll get on this.
I can only apologise for any lack of clarity. Do you wish to proceed?
Wendy folds her arms.
Be daft not to, having blown 50 quid on petrol.
Excellent stuff. Now, we do have a slight issue, Wendy.
Another one?
Your choice of attire.
Wendy peeks down at herself and shrugs.
For the story we're selling, you know, a family suffocated by government austerity, brushed under the breadline.
What are you trying to say?
With your permed hair, glamorous outfit, well, some may struggle to buy it. Forget it, you're here now.
Conway News will get the clicks either way, whether controversially or not. Nothing riles Tory Britain quite like a female single mother scamming benefits, rinsing precious, righteous taxpayers who contribute a measly grand a year out of their hypothetical dough. The government will love it.
Anything you'd like to open with?
Where do I start? This scummy Tory government are a shambles. Not an ounce of compassion for the chronically disabled.
Justin grits his teeth and looks away. He has long grown accustomed to the bogus slandering of his mental state for the family's financial benefit. Half an hour of dissociation should see this sickly chapter out, until the article's paraded around school, that is.
Sinking right back into the Victorian age. Well, I mean, maybe things were better then. Nothing was diagnosed. Wouldn't have a clue about his issues. Could have carried on as normal.
This is a line chucked in to ascertain her shock at Justin's diagnosis. Had she lived before the invention of disability benefits, her workhouse residence and ominous death from starvation before turning 30 is a hypothetical foregone conclusion. Benefit scrounging skills are hardly transferable to that uncompromising era. With all opening wobbles aside, Wendy unloads her pre-scripted, sympathy-inducing rant, which goes entirely to plan. Justin chimes in at just the right moments while appearing sullen throughout, which entails no acting whatsoever. She could not be prouder of herself, and for once, Justin. However, not even his exquisitely executed hollow performance buys him a viewing of the day's FA Cup games. £2.99 Mayo Chicken McDonald's burgers prove the peak of his reward. So, back home to Minford it is, where Justin ploughs through his long division homework, slouched at the desk of his sweaty attic room in their two-bedroom detached house on the upper outskirts of Bangor, with a lethargic, lopsided posture. A room entirely void of colour and personalisation, both down to their perpetual house moving owing to Wendy's lofty, unattainable standards and her invasive nature. Anything Justin does to his room, whether shuffling the TV into a non-neck-jarring position or whacking up a football poster, is met with either scorn or, more often than not, a comprehensive room reshuffling done to stifle any brewing autonomy. While the homework proves dreary, Justin knows his time is coming soon. Time for a bit of FIFA. His oversized, faded clothing bears the buckets of sweat, signifying his anticipation. At 12 o'clock on the dot, as per usual, a barely audible clang rattles from downstairs, firing up his jaded eyes.
Here we go, showtime!
Wendy clanging her metal weed grinder bags between 15 and 25 minutes for a game of FIFA while she's outside, bumming her joint. She adamantly deters Justin from partaking in any football-related activities, whether playing the game, watching on TV, or playing FIFA, Justin's all-time favourite game by a country mile. Despite using the possible dementia from heading the ball excuse to mimic concern, this is just another strand of her all-encompassing control. Aside from a reasonable two-hour daily limit, Wendy doesn't stop Justin from playing other video games. She had no problem with him spending birthday money on Grand Theft Auto 5, but he is categorically banned from playing FIFA. Justin peeks out of his room's velux window to see Wendy swatting a black cat off her garden lounger. He leaps into action. Under a corner floorboard, carefully covered by a rug, only accessible because of the loose carpet, lies FIFA 22. Wary of avoiding the slightest creak, he lifts it and shoves its disc into his Xbox console. Justin is Crystal Palace through and through, having been taken to Selhurst Park by his father, Greg, at the age of 9. The last time Wendy let them see each other. Such is his enthrallment that Justin forgets to whack on the TV's mute button as the console fires up, a mistake he swiftly makes amends for within seconds. It's Liverpool up next, in his Crystal Palace career mode, where he's battling dreaded relegation on legendary difficulty. He passes it back to Joachim Andersen from kickoff and plays a sweeping 60-yard pass out to Zaha on the left wing. Zaha takes a sumptuous first touch, pirouettes around Trent Alexander-Arnold, cuts into the box and smashes a pearl into Alisson's top right-hand corner.
Get in!
As Liverpool kick back off, the house's electric cuts out, bringing Justin's basking glory to a premature end. Knowing he's bang in trouble, this rare surge of vigour soon evaporates. With the cut electric locking the game inside, he forces the disc tray open before scrambling to bury FIFA's case under the floorboard. Once GTA 5's whacked in, he restlessly sits down as loud footsteps clamber up the stairs.
You better not have been!
Was on GTA.
Never has GTA brought you such delirium.
Won a pool tournament. Didn't even get to save it.
Wendy roughly examines the 5 cases of Justin's game pile.
Fucking lying to me, I can tell. Middle of my fag, the lot.
She unplugs Justin's 42-inch telly and lugs it down the stairs on her shoulder.
Footy's not on until 12:30. I had an hour left.
Justin wails and punches his springy bed. After garnering no response, Justin slaps the pile of games and marches downstairs to find Wendy padlocking his pride and joy in a vintage dark brown oak cupboard.
What about my precious little routine you're always on about? Can't be that fundamental, can it?
Wendy ferociously glares over. From the age of 3, she pushed for Justin to be dished a mental health label. By the age of 4, she got her wish when he was diagnosed with Asperger's, thus bagging her a cushy recurring wad of disability benefits known as PIPs on his behalf. Enough to ensure that, alongside other forged benefits, she has no need to work. Justin has historically fought this and firmly entrusted in his sanity. However, she insists he carries out a strict routine to publicly exhibit these symptoms. To maintain the masquerade, Wendy forces Justin to wear a hearing aid that he doesn't need to school and pick their current location based on its remote nature, a brutal uphill hour-long walk away from Bangor Secondary School. Wendy's logic being that if she further isolates Justin, fewer neighbours are around to condemn the rare glimmers of faulty parenting she fails to keep under wraps. Not only that, but it restricts Justin's social life. For the most part, Justin has no issues making friends, but heavy isolation-induced depression has stifled this confidence over time. For the back chat alone, Wendy tortuously breaks Justin's routine by dumping him with his least favourite minders. She was going to drop him at the Colberts, a family of 3 with an age-appropriate son, but instead he's bound for the Porter's place, an execrable nightmare. Not only are their children pestiferous, toxic little 7 and 9-year-old brats, but their parents treat Justin as such. A 7 p.m. curfew and 9 p.m. bedtime in a screenless room is non-negotiable, only made worse by Justin not owning a phone. Wendy fully well knows this and cackles her way to the ATM. Justin's weekend highlight is a live Bethesda Athletic football match, with Clive's house a mere few metres from the ground. But being a 5:30 p.m. kickoff, he's forced back for 7 p.m, just as a captivating second half unfolds with the score agonisingly level at 3-3. A sneering parting comment sees Justin spend Sunday night stewing.
Have cunts in school been taking the piss? This can't happen.
Despite pestering Wendy to add razors to the shopping list, she never does. Set half an hour earlier than needed, his 6 a.m. alarm dramatically whirls after a patchy night's kip. Justin heads straight for the bathroom. Justin's never had freedom over his choice of haircut, a source of splenetic resentment that, until now, had been mostly subdued. He despises it being long, a mixture of curl and wave that offers neither, leaving a nothing mop of hair void of identity. Justin would settle for a buzz cut, anything to free his head of the weight and avoid morning tinkering. Spotting an old pot of Dax wax at the back of the bathroom cupboard, Justin experiments by roughly scooping his barnet into a quiff. Sticking his dangling, uneven side chops behind his ears only adds to the mess. He sighs at the lopsided result and waxes it forward instead. The red Dax wax's density leaves parts sticking up and small clumps glued into his hair. Not the end of the world as he rinses most out in the shower and lets his hair sit as it falls. After whacking the wax back in place for another day, he finds a pink, two-blade Bic hair razor with his mother's grisly dark leg hair wedged in the blades. It may not be ideal, yet Justin seizes the chance to utilise his YouTube shaving education. First, he takes a picture of the cupboard's layout. Everything must return to its precise order to avoid Wendy's wrath. After sifting out what he can of the leftover leg hair, which reveals the blade's early stage rust, Justin applies blue hand soap to his upper lip, cautiously shaves the first bit, and winces in pain. He gazes at his partly shaved moustache, grins, and cracks on with the rest, growing to relish the rush of endorphins gifted from the stinging pain. While Justin rocks up to school early, his mother's dismissive voice lurks at the back of his head. Despite holding energy to burn, he passively wanders through the densely populated fields in his oversized school uniform rather than joining the various ongoing football games. First up is physics, with science being among Justin's most loathed subjects. Prone to in-class dissociation, other than during sports lessons, he's an average student at best. On this occasion, he picks the front row to slouch down on, as Mr. Beckinsdale delivers a monotone presentation on kinematics, a costly mistake that Justin's sleep-deprived mind fails to spot. With the back row 20 metres from the screen, those perched there move forward and sit on top of the second row of desks. One lad relishing this is boisterous, chain-wearing Blake Bolton, an Adidas stripe-wearing lump, already caked in facial hair, without the maturity to go alongside it. Justin recently left Sir Fon School because of bullying, partly why he's failed to establish himself among a group. Both this and his subsequent solitary reputation mean he's often the butt of classroom debauchery. This second set group, a plethora of set one material underachievers, is a class where it's bound to transpire. Blake kicks off proceedings by lifting the back of Justin's jumper with his outstretched leg.
Get fucked!
Justin punches Blake's leg. Mr. Beckinsdale begrudgingly stops, throws a flittering glare Justin's way, and recommences the dour rambling. After leaving it a safe 30 seconds, Blake takes advantage of the teacher's turned back by repeating his classroom sin, this time inadvertently revealing Justin's torso and belly to a couple of sniggering female students.
Quick!
Justin grabs a ruler and swipes Blake's leg with a semi-sharp edge.
Justin Billings! Corridor! Now!
Blake and his mates howl as Justin walks out with a sunken, bright red, blushing face. All other than Hugh, who sympathetically looks on with bulging eyes stacked with empathy. A grisly post-class dressing down ensures Justin's 5 minutes late for lunch.
No point fighting the system. Game's rigged.
After waiting by the back door, Hugh catches up to a rapidly paced Justin as he brushes past. While Hugh hasn't come close to being bullied at school, a mentally abusive father gifts him insight and compassion into Justin's plight.
Don't worry about Blake, harmless lad he is,
Hugh reassuringly says.
I'll spark him out one day, you know.
They approach a playground football game, where Blake's calling the shots from midfield, ferociously demanding blood and guts from his teammates without leading by example.
He just thinks everyone should be the same, can't act non-conformers. Now he knows he's losing that battle and, well, can't get his little meatball head round it.
Blake slips on a muddy bit of turf.
Come for the game, man. I know your sound. He has anything to say about it, I'll two-foot him right down his glass knee.
My commitments beckon. Wish I could.
Give us your number and bell us after you're done. Meatball won't let anyone go in for dinner till they've had at least the first of 21.
Phone's down the shop.
Hugh shrugs in subtle resignation.
Cracked it on the wall. Palace letting in that fourth. In a bit.
He paces off. Justin never owned a phone, not even a Nokia brick. In reality, she fears losing control of his usage and, most importantly, research avenues. First up on today's enforced duties is a spurious appointment at a private hearing clinic. Pointlessly dressed up in overly smart office clothing, Wendy breaks the speed limit the whole half-hour drive to Carnarvon, just getting them there on time. She could just buy a fake hearing aid off the internet, but covers every detail in her search for sympathy as a disabled child's mother and carer. Henry Rowlandson awaits, a slickly dressed private hearing doctor with an array of accolades framed on his office wall. As strictly instructed, Justin delivers rehearsed, in-depth analysis on the hissing and throbbing, supposedly dogging his educational focus.
Given that Justin's tinnitus symptoms have intensified, yes, we have no reason not to provide a minuscule upgrade,
Henry says to Wendy, having been bulldozed after expressing minor doubts.
In just recently, we have a new range, quite the plethora of fresh options.
He passes Wendy a hearing aid leaflet full of non-visible inside-the-ear hearing aids, a far cry from Justin's current black behind-the-ear piece.
Add an element of subtlety.
Well, we'll go for the same again.
I wouldn't charge you any extra, on account of your unwavering loyalty.
Behind the ear will be quite fine.
With a fresh order placed for an exact matching black behind-the-ear hearing aid, Wendy runs for the car. They're running late and left with only half an hour to reach Bangor for Justin's counselling session with CAMHS, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service.
Get a bloody move on!
They soon find themselves stuck in traffic, virtually guaranteeing their tardiness. Wendy manically seeks an opening, barely listening to Justin pitch his desire for a mobile phone.
What's so wrong about the idea, though?
Fucking pensioner prick. Shouldn't be on the road.
Wendy says after a 90-year-old in a 60s Rolls-Royce cuts across her opening into a marginally faster lane.
I'm going to be 16.
It's better for your mental health.
I can't plan things with no one. Only mug in the whole school with no phone. Me. Got ripped enough in primary, let alone now.
Wendy rolls her eyes.
What if I miss the bus? There goes the old routine, right down the drain. You told me autistic people had heightened sensitivity. Causes things to go wrong, right?
Yes, you do.
Well, shouldn't I have one then? In the event of one of these phantom bloody meltdowns I supposedly have? Do wonders for the benefit, Black?
Toxic little tone on you today. Better have it sorted out before we get there.
Justin dabs the drops of blood drawn from his hairline.
It takes graft keeping to your routine, and you're not putting in. It affects me when you don't, and I have enough to think about. What if that hit your eye? A cancelled session won't look good, could drag us right down in the shitter. Think before you speak.
They arrive 10 minutes late to the converted listed building, serving as the county's CAMS headquarters, and rush inside. Justin's quietly confident counsellor, Vivian, awaits. She did the same job in Kent, where her family lived, until relocating to Gwynedd a year ago. She never anticipated the depth of issues facing North Wales' mental health system. Chronic staff shortages, dire financial backing, constantly turning away severely sick children for treatment as a result, leaving her on the brink of loathing a job she started with unbridled exuberance. The sight of Justin somewhat perks her up. After the hearing clinic's bad news, it's fair to say Wendy's slapped-ass face turns a whole new shade of sour.
Justin's formidable progress is a brilliant sign, Wendy. And as such, we see it only fitting to reduce him to monthly appointments.
Vivian defensively says, in bewilderment at Wendy's hostile reaction. Bottomless fear of their benefits being slashed trumps any joy of her son's progress.
It's very much a positive, Wendy.
Given all the blues he's hacked this week, I think you'll reconsider.
Justin subtly rolls his eyes and internally sighs. That's his cue card to act up. Keep to the script and swerve psychological punishment later on.
Oh yeah.
He nods with his head down while mustering performance energy.
I'm feeling dead worthless. My dad, he hasn't wanted to see me for years now.
Sorry to hear that, Justin.
Didn't care initially. But over time it's, well, dented my pride, you know? Feeling the brunt of that as of late. Fact, he doesn't even help with bills. Let us rot away on benefits.
While in two minds, Vivian retains her professionalism and empathetically nods.